Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good morning, video games. Welcome once again to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo. With me, as always,
Ben Vanel here. Tommy, it's good to be recording in Knox Towers once again. We put on the hand sanitizer. We went through the de-louser.
Mm-hmm.
We did a full body, like high temperature shower as we entered. And it's good to be here with the cleanest man in the world, Adam Knox.
I'm glad you were so receptive to me pushing you up against the wall, making you strip and hosing you down. That doesn't make you any cleaner.
That should have been the final step in what he's walking through in Get Smart. Just like a brutal, just gets to like one final room. It's just like a brutal cavity search.
Yeah. But he like bonks his nose on the guy's hand while he's trying to.
While you're down there?
I always thought that that was Mel Brooks. I didn't know who Mel Brooks was for a while, and I thought that the guy who was
Don
Cheadle.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Don
Cheadle. Don
Lane? Don Adams.
No, Don Adams.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, I didn't know who he was because I was a child.
Mm.
But then later on in life, I got smart.
Okay.
And I figured out that he was two different people.
Okay.
Well, he wasn't two different, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Never got into Get Smart.
No.
Oh, I loved it.
Liked the intro.
I loved it. Yeah,
remember, it would come on and I'd be like, I'm sticking around for the next 30 seconds and then I am out of here.
The song's great.
Yeah.
Great song. Good, you know, door closing
stuff.
Dude,
multiple doors.
Yeah, yeah.
If that, a lot of shows, they just have one door. But the beauty of Get Smart was that they realized more doors equals more laughter.
Well, the band wasn't called The Door.
Exactly.
They knew it.
They'd figured it out years before.
Yeah, yeah. Not that many years before. I think Get Smart was the 60s.
It could be. Shoe phone.
That's it.
When would they have invented that? Surely not in the 60s. And that was a real invention that they were actually using.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That it's good to be back. It's good to be back in the same room.
Yes.
It's easy just to bounce off of each other with this great content about shit that's going on in our lives right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was telling you, Adam, before we started, I'm a
why didn't you tell me?
You weren't here yet.
Okay.
Okay? You happy for that to be a matter of public record
I don't
now?
Like you keeping secrets from me,
Tommy. You were only up to the fourth door at this time.
Oh,
We had a lot more time of you bumbling around and accidentally twisting around with the door or getting flung back through the bookcase or whatever. Fuck it, I don't remember that show well enough.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you got turned around in a bookcase at some point.
Yeah.
It's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
And what? And then the whole sequence of doors starts all over again. Of him.
Well, he's
back
going
out
back
the
through
way.
Them the other direction.
Yeah, he doesn't know.
Yeah, right. Because he just got a book from the bookcase. He's like, well, this is what I came here to get. Spins around out the doors.
This book called Secret Door Opening. Can't wait to read this one. Hidden Lever.
Oh,
this sounds like a hell of a read.
Yes.
No, I'm a little bit tired this afternoon. I didn't sleep very well last night because there was a thunderstorm and I got scared.
Oh, yeah. That was sick. I loved that. Very loud.
It was okay. It was a thunderstorm. It wasn't
It was
that.
A pretty good one.
It was all right. But I don't know. I've not been paying attention to the outside world even now that I can.
Yeah.
You don't notice a thunderstorm when you've got headphones blaring thunderstorm music.
To relax.
I've got a YouTube thunderstorm relaxation video that constantly plays.
So it's a little annoying because it's like, well, now that the real thing is going on outside, this is a waste of these expensive noise-canceling headphones and this incredible playlist that I've queued up for myself.
Just in stubbornness is like, I'm not taking them off.
Yeah.
I refuse to engage.
Mm-hmm.
Flicking my lights on and off in my house to simulate. That's what I was doing. I've got 150 doors to get through to get in here.
So we're continuing our complete history of video games, unabridged.
Yep. We've covered everything.
Comprehensive.
Yes.
Last week we finished off the 80s. Mm-hmm. We kind of wrapped up the Master System and NES generation, and we're now moving into the start of the 90s. Mm. So I guess, yeah, the NES is still going for a little bit.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's still got a bit of life left in it.
Same as the SNES will as well. There's a whole bunch of games releasing on it after the other platform has already come out.
Yeah.
Right.
That doesn't really happen so much anymore.
Yeah,
stuff.
You get it happens
with Nintendo.
Yeah.
Nintendo is the one company that still releases games on the Wii. Like, sure, the other outlets don't, but like...
They do. No, they do. There's everything is coming out on both. It did for the last generation. It did for the... You don't get the... Like, here's just a 360 game and it won't be on the Xbox One thing. I don't think you really got that as much. But like fucking Metal Gear Solid 5 came out on all of them and that was in 2015.
Mm. Right, mm. right.
So it's changed a bit, but Pete, you know, there's that install base there, especially with something like the NES, which is wildly successful in a way that consoles haven't really been up until then. So of course they keep releasing fucking four more Mega Mans or whatever.
Mm. Well, at this point too, I guess maybe because it is still a relatively new industry, there would have been, I guess maybe a bit of, you know, so they announce, oh, there's going to be this new thing called the Super Nintendo. Mm. And people just not really familiar with like planned obsolescence yet at this point of being people, like, what the hell does this mean? Is this a new thing or?
You can watch on YouTube news reports from the time of like angry parents being like, why the fuck am I buying my kid another thing?
Oh. Yeah.
I already bought a thing and now the fucking they come over here. They send us another console. No. What are they doing over there in Japan? They're all angry at Japan in it.
Is it like, it's not like what happened with the Wii U then, when people were like kind of confused if it was just an expansion of the Wii?
Well, I think
that would have happened. Yeah. Calling it the Super Nintendo probably would have made people think, oh, but I guess I can just keep the old one and stuff will just still keep coming out for that. And this is just a second thing or maybe it plays the same games, but they look a little better. Yeah, I mean, it could have. There's a version of that where the Super Nintendo just tanks because the messaging is just confusing to people.
Yeah. And so that's what happened to the Mega Drive, kind of, is that the Mega Drive came out and was fine, but then they were like, here's the Mega CD and here's the 32X. And people were like, is this a new fucking console? And they're like, kinda. We don't know. Buy it and figure it out.
Give us your money and then we'll sort out what it actually is.
So this was definitely a time when people were... I initially, at least, with the Super Nintendo, definitely confused about what the point of it was, thought it was a bit of a rort to be given this new thing. But as people began to see the improvements that they'd made with it, I think it became understood.
It's interesting to think back to a world where there's no... We're all so used to it now. It's like, oh, my phone will be basically a brick within a year and a half. Yeah. I'll just have to get a new one. But they're being... what would the precedent have been? Even computers are new
cassette
enough.
Cassette tapes to audio CDs and like so people vinyl are used to cassette tapes. Yeah. Things upgrade, but...
But even then, like, and I think maybe CD is the first generation of tech that is kind of shitty, but like I know my parents had like tape players that lasted from the 80s until the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Like that stuff did last and it is the early 90s when it starts to become a little more flimsy. I remember like the lasers in CD players often would just go after a couple of years.
Sure, in like a Sega Saturn, I had to open my... I didn't have to because the answer to this is just don't play the fucking Sega Saturn anymore. But I opened it up and turned up the strength of the laser a tiny bit because it was starting to go and it'll go more soon.
Yes.
But, you know, that's what happens with family. The build quality of these things, though, is still fine. A lot of these things still run.
Right.
There's like with the cartridges, I guess nowadays you run into the problem where they had those little lithium batteries in them that are dead.
Right.
There's certain...
That's just for saving, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is a part of it for sure. And like in original Xboxes, this isn't for a while, but there's like a transistor in some of them that will explode or something if you leave it in there.
Right.
Definitely, technology still is built with making it cheaper in mind primarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, what era do you get into where there does start to be that, I guess, you know, kind of, not nefarious, it's probably the wrong term for it, but the actual planned obsolescence, like companies going, we'll just kind of make, you know, this thing where people go, oh, they make it so that the iPhone craps out within a year so that you have to buy a new one. It's like, it's just not seen as good business to make something that is going to like be sturdy and last and hold out for decades to come.
It's already happening in the early 90s here where you've got like... So with the Game Boy, for example, they bring out the Game Boy Pocket and there's all these things that are like upgrades to it and they give you new stuff.
Yeah.
But it is all made with... There's like that original version of the Mega Drive and then the Mega Drive 2, which looks a bit nicer and is a different form factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a third one as well. There's heaps of shit like that already starting to go on.
Just to go back to what you brought up before, the Sega CD is so funny. So it's basically, what could it do? Because it's, I remember Sonic CD being
you're
going like,
to be blown away by this, by what it can do. But it is kind of like a Sega.
Yeah.
But then the games come on the format. Instead of a cartridge, it's something called a compact disc.
Okay, you've lost me.
It's smaller than a regular disc though, which...
But where does the CD come into it?
Yeah.
So CD is, and this is pretty clever, and stay with me here.
Okay.
So is if the you console look, wearing a trench coat and kind of smoking like it's a bit seedy?
No, not seedy. No, not seedy. It's capital C, capital D.
Oh.
Yeah. It's what's called... I think an acronym, but this wouldn't be an acronym because you've got to be able to say it out loud for it to be an acronym.
I believe that's true. Yeah, just an abbreviation.
This is just an abbreviation.
Initialization is what it's called. It's an annoying word that no one ever says because acronym just rubs the tongue.
Dude, it rubs me way off the tongue. The C in compact, they take that, put it and isolate it.
Okay.
Just only take the C, the initial.
As we've got the whiteboard out for everyone listening at home.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's just got a big picture of like boobs on it.
Yeah.
My question is a disc not already compact by its very nature?
People are associating disc with the laser disc. For example.
Still relatively compact. Yeah. I could take that with me
it's
if I wanted
to. It's bigger
than
a compact disc. If you want to get more compact.
I know, but it's compact enough that I'm able to go and get it from the shop and then take it home.
Yeah, well, it's not a fucking building, but it's not... you can't...
I got a compact steak the other day. It was big. It was small enough that I could pick it up and take it home from the shop.
No, so that's just a steak.
A compact steak.
Yeah. Compact doesn't mean you can... Okay.
Well, by your logic.
No, this is willful misunderstanding of the enormous technological revolution. And revolving is something that a compact disc does. So that's why I've chosen that word. Okay. That the compact disc was.
You got him against the ropes, Ben.
No, you don't. It stores
Men
more data.
Men destroy podcast hosts with sheer facts. My question was... in terms of the actual what being on CDs could actually do for the games.
Right, more data.
It was just I remember Sonic CD, you know, it's a great game, it's a great platformer, but it still just is a basically 16-bit platformer that's got animated cutscenes and like proper quality music.
So I think
barely worth the effort.
The Sega CD added a little bit of processing power. It could do some or like not 3D but like scaling stuff better than the Mega Drive on its own could. Which I don't think was used that much by many games. But then, the main thing was storing heaps of data, which again, most games didn't because just the files that you were creating to make a game at the time weren't large by their nature. And then full quality CD audio, so music or speech was often the thing.
Right.
So like adventure games would come out on the Sega CD and be good.
Mm.
You get your Monkey Islands and shit, and you'd be like, hey, he's fucking chatting to me. And you'd talk back and he'd ignore you, and you'd be like, this technology doesn't fucking work.
So was the Sega CD an add-on to the Mega Drive or its own console? It was an add-on,
It was
right?
an add-on.
Oh, really?
You
I
like,
thought it was its own thing.
No, you jammed your Mega Drive on top of it.
Oh.
And then it was...
So it was a bottom.
It was a bottom. Right. And the Mega Drive was a top, and then the 32X was a super top, where it would go into the Mega Drive in the cartridge slot, and then you'd put another cartridge into that. There's photos of like...
Which one of them do you fuck?
Any of them. You can do whichever you like.
Okay. I would argue 32X is the top, Mega Drive's the bottom, and the CD is the power bottom.
I guess so. None of these terms existed at the time, though. This is the early 90s. People were still pretending like that wasn't something they ever had to think about. So
you're right. Being gay and having a preference for how you fuck didn't exist yet.
In the back in the 90s, they called them good friends.
They were all confirmed bachelors, I believe. Yeah.
They said, your dad's living with his friend now.
They're roommates.
We still love you. So anyway,
sensitive.
It was very confusing for people, though, at the time.
Right.
Because... The branding wasn't that different. The benefits weren't that clear. And then none of them had really the libraries of games to justify their existence. They're all expensive at the time. So Sega starts they come into the 90s high. The Mega Drive is like the first 16-bit system that gets real big.
Mm-hmm. So what year is the Mega Drive?
89, right, 88, okay. something like that. So it's got a head start.
Yeah.
And then everyone's into it. It does very well, especially in European markets.
Mm-hmm.
I think everywhere, kind of.
Yeah.
But then they start milking it like that. And apparently it's Sega of America that is the big issue with all of this.
Yeah.
They're kind of a separate company from the Japanese
Sega. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, and they're going hard with all their advertising tactics where they're going after Nintendo.
Sega does what Nintendo don't.
All that stuff. Yeah. Yes. Where they're anytime it's pretty rare that you see companies explicitly go, this company sucks, instead of it just being kind of like veiled and
the only like recent ish example of that comes to mind is when Sony did that short little video of how to share games on a PS4. And it's just one of them handing a disc to the other one.
Yes, around the launch of the Xbox One. Yeah.
But even then, they're not... Are they explicit? I mean, it's clear what they're referencing.
I don't think
they're
not said,
explicitly naming, hey, Microsoft suck.
Was the... Coke v. Pepsi was pretty explicit, wasn't it? They were doing like the taste tests and stuff like that.
Blind taste tests.
Was that around in the 90s or earlier?
Mega Drive is Pepsi. And Nintendo is Coke at this point, for sure. But then imagine if Pepsi was like, now we've got a second flavor of Pepsi, but you need to buy the original Pepsi to be able to taste it.
Yeah.
You just pour it into the can. It's only flavoring.
It's a sachet,
So they start going down around this point, and we'll talk about it next week with the late 90s, but the Saturn and the Dreamcast are all sort of... preordained.
So yeah, because a lot of the stuff with them getting their big success with the Mega Drive, of course the Genesis to any of our American listeners, but where
Mega Drive is such a better name.
So much better, and we will continue to just refer to it as that.
My favorite book from the Bible.
We'll continue to say Sega as well, not Sega.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Sega.
They have their success, but it just comes from, like, right off the bat, this kind of negative place where they go, like, Sonic is a direct response to Mario. It's all done deliberately to combat this other company that has a foothold rather than go, hey, let's do our own thing and try and take them on at that. It comes from this very, like, competitive, aggressive, like, we have to beat these guys. And, of course, plenty of companies think that, but you can be the biggest – you can try and be the biggest band in the world on your own terms without having to go, hey, let's write songs that shit on how bad Radiohead is. Like, you know what I mean?
That's a good point. And marketing wise at the very least, because like them saying Sonic is fast, but Mario is slow.
Yeah.
Fuck Mario. But they never, like, well, Mario is good and Sonic is bad.
The directive from that company is make something that is that's a platformer, but that, let's look at, what's the point? What's a different thing that we can do to this game that we can then use to highlight its flaws or its weaknesses?
Because video games are still angled very much at children at this point as well, they come into this knowing that if you're going to try and market to kids, it's their parents obviously buying it for them. They're not going to get them to. They already were like, no, why do I have to get you a fucking Super Nintendo now? So that's a big reason for these sort of console war type things happening, especially with the Mega Drive and the Super Nintendo, which were sort of marketed that way and viewed more that way. Later on in the 90s, you start getting these other consoles coming out that are directed more towards an adult market. So like the 3DO comes along in 93-ish. You've got the Super Nintendo, you've got the Mega Drive, they're fighting. And then the Mega Drive is also putting CD shit out. And then, which Nintendo also obviously thought about doing, not to go all over the fucking place, but like the PlayStation is a direct result of Nintendo exploring their options with CD add-ons and stuff.
Did one of them, a prototype of them, just came up on eBay quite recently, right? Like within the last month or something, it sold for some insane amount of money.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. And it's unusable, like you can't, but whatever.
Nothing's on it. Yeah.
But yeah, for years and years, Nintendo are very stubborn and staunch and like, no, we're a cartridge company.
They, for some reason, and I didn't know this until looking at stuff for this, in 1994, they declared 1994 the year of the cartridge.
Yes.
Which is immediately after and as all these 3DOs and stuff are coming out
that
are CD-based. And that is what people are saying is the future, largely because it's taken such a hold of the music industry that, it's the big deal.
Yeah.
The big cheese.
I think that's one of the only things I've ever heard about Nintendo that seems to be like a pointed statement to their competitors, right? Usually they're very much like, we're just a nice company. We do our own things. We innovate, sure, but we're doing it on our own terms.
Right.
They don't seem to be the ones stirring the fire of like the console wars.
No, I guess not. But it's very Nintendo to be like, this new thing is confusing to us and we refuse to do it, like they are with the internet now.
Yeah.
Everyone loves getting on the internet and figuring out a fucking friend code.
Yeah.
So this is them doing that. But so the 3DO and shit, so weird to me. I've never seen any of these in real life. So there's like the 3DO, the Atari Jaguar, the Amiga CD32. There's like a fucking, there's another one. So the CDI.
Oh, right. Yep.
And they're all positioning themselves at this point in the sort of 93-ish as multimedia centers.
Right.
Here's the focus of the living room, sort of like how the Xbox One did, where it's not just for games. You can put everything else that comes on CDs in this, which is music, and we're imagining, but it won't happen, videos.
Yeah. Because VCD was a thing in, what was that, the early 2000s even? Like, later than this.
Yeah, it went up until at least the late 90s.
Right.
Until DVDs sort of, you know, became big in the, like, 99, I think DVDs started kicking off.
Yes,
around the Matrix-ish.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. But, then, like, they didn't have commercial releases as VCDs, did they?
Some things did. So on the 3DO, the 3DO was made by one company called 3DO.
The 3DO company.
Yeah. And so that company...
How did they come up with that name?
I don't know.
How did you not remember the name?
I was assuming that I must be wrong because...
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
Yeah.
It's
literally called the 3DO company.
I wonder what else they've done.
Wow. Oh, their best-selling game is Gex.
That's right. Trip Hawkins. So he was the dude. He used to be...
Is he a character or a real person?
He was the EA founder.
Oh.
So he made Electronic Arts and then he went off and he's like, okay, here's my new thing. It's the 3DO.
Yeah.
And it was an open source-ish kind of... It wasn't open source. I'm using that word wrong. But you could license the blueprint of this technology... And make your own 3DO if you were a company.
So if you're like a Panasonic it turns out a Sanyo. Who else produced
Gold Star?
Okay.
So these companies were able to make their own hardware.
Yeah.
Yes.
So have you ever seen that like picture of the Panasonic GameCube?
No.
And there's like TVs that had built-in Dreamcasts on them.
Okay.
Whoa. Shit like that where they would give you the rights to build your own version of this thing.
Right.
And so their idea with it is that, it was this, here's everything. You can play games, you can listen to music, you can watch these fucking CDs. So the only like videos that got put out on it were like porn and shit.
Right, okay.
But like softcore, light touch porn.
Which
you know.
Usually would drive a technological sort of generation,
It's
right?
always the thing.
Famously, it usually is, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the only reason I ever got a sketchbook. it goes back as far as that, where people the pencil was largely predominant.
Pen and paper, people could draw boobs with it. Yeah. Calculator, same thing.
Yeah.
The abacus, you can't titillate yourself.
You can't.
With that, you know.
The calculator industry is always indebted to the number 58,008 because pornography drives sales.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they were trying to do that.
That number won big at the Adult Film Awards that year.
It all sucked, though, is the problem. The quality was so off in a similar way to how Atari fucked up in the previous decade.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff was so poorly quality controlled. The CDI especially has those like infamous Zelda games that are fucking dog shit.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Nintendo, like one of the few, well, they've been doing it more lately, but like rare for them to license out their property to someone else.
Right. But at this time, all of these things look like the fucking Switch eShop where it's just this dog shit all over the place.
Yeah.
And then also the 3DO and the Atari Jaguar and these kind of consoles are straddling this weird line between generations where they're not quite good enough to do 3D properly yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're doing, you know, nobody gives a shit about a new 2D console at that point.
Right.
Which is part of the problem that the Saturn faces in the next few years that we'll talk about next week. But anyway, so all these consoles come out and they fade away very fucking quickly. Mm. We're probably not going to talk about the games for them much because very few people have experience with these consoles.
Yeah, yeah.
The 3DO was named Time Magazine's 1993 Product of the Year.
Wow.
1993.
And it still was a flop.
Yeah.
God.
1993 is the year that they invented the kettle as well. So it won over some big shit. I don't know what year I think the 90s is where I'm talking about sketchbooks and kettles.
I know. Yeah. Well, this is when we were children.
Yeah.
So maybe
everything
it's just
was
that.
New to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything was new. So 93, you're happy to go on record as being the first year that you saw a kettle.
Not saw, but maybe understood. I would have been
sure.
4 in 93.
Okay.
So
it could have. What was your product of the year for 93 as a 4-year-old?
That is a great question.
Probably like a fucking milk bottle or something.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
What do 4-year-olds do?
I
wasn't
I
drinking
don't
milk
know.
Out of bottle.
In 1993? What did you? It makes it sound like you grew up in the 50s, yeah. kicking a milk bottle around in the street.
Yeah, the old hoop and stick.
93.
What was my product of the year? I remember my grandpa had like one of those little toy dogs that had a like would kind of sort of walk along the ground and yelp and then do a backflip.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And it was like a big treat that he would like go and fetch it from the cupboard and give us a little show with it when I went around. Then that was probably my product of the year in 1993.
Okay.
We had a real dog with arthritis that would just walk like one of those.
And then you'd sort of pick it up and throw it backwards, be like, do a flip.
It would fall downstairs. Yeah. And be like, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. We didn't. I'm making that up. But the Atari Jaguar even was sort of promoted as a 64-bit console,
yeah,
which it
right.
technically was, but it, you right. would not compare it to.
Yeah,
Nintendo
what is
64.
This controller?
It's They're got, all terrible.
Yeah, it's got, if you look at the Atari Jaguar controller, it's got, you know, your standard 3 buttons D-pad.
Oh.
And then just like 12 numerical buttons.
It's got a phone keypad.
Yeah. It's got, yeah.
And so you'd, with a game would come like a little insert card that you would put over the top of that and it would have images of what those buttons did. So it would be like a picture of a shotgun for Doom and whatever.
They did that for some of their earlier consoles as well, didn't they? They did have a phone-shaped controller for one of the early Ataris,
I think that was the Intellivision or the ColecoVision or some shit like that.
Right. But that was a thing, those overlays.
Yeah, you still get those fucking things for keyboards for like PUBG and whatever.
Yes,
it'll
very
have
true.
Just like an image of what you're doing instead of the letter F.
Yeah.
But so there's a lot of console action happening around these early 90s. All of it rendered irrelevant basically by the success of the Super Nintendo or the Super Famicom and the Sega Mega Drive or Genesis.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the Game Boy and the handheld market, which is like the only player. The Atari Lynx and the fucking whatever the other one was.
Yeah.
They come out the Game Gear.
That's right.
Don't hold a candle to it. The Game Boy kills them all.
The Game Boy essentially dominates the entire 90s.
Yeah.
Right?
And Nintendo has always had the handheld space to themselves, basically. Like the PSP and the Vita.
Mm.
The Vita didn't work, and the PSP gave them like half a run, but not really. Nintendo owns handheld games.
Mm. Yeah.
Other than phones now, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where they have had a few bad ones.
So I guess the Game Boy is the one that was out. Maybe the Mega Drive even was out the earliest. Do you want to talk about some games like by console or go through by year if we're getting into the games themselves?
That's a good question. Do we want to start maybe with the Game Boy? Because it's already around. It's already
so
sort
is
of,
the Mega Drive.
Okay. Well, yeah, but
I'm happy to start with the Game Boy either way, though.
The Game Boy's been around a little longer.
Let's start with the 3DO. Road Rash is a very... well, the Game Boy is probably the console I played the most out of any of these.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, I had a Game Boy when I was a little baby boy myself. Some people called me the real Game Boy.
Okay.
Who? And I said, what's a kettle?
Did you
I was
have
a fucking idiot when I was a kid.
Did you have the Game Boy kettle? The little peripheral that you attach to it? And it'd churn out a bunch of very, very low quality tea.
Yeah, I didn't know what how to work it. But I loved the Game Boy, the original one.
Was that your product of the year for 1993?
Probably, yeah. I played it on the plane over from the UK to Australia the entire time. I feel like I might have said that about Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, we talked about it last ep.
Tetris is obviously the big one. We talked about some of that. But in terms of 90s Game Boy games, Super Mario Land 2, six golden coins
yep.
out of 1992. Fuck, that's a good game to this day.
I replayed it about 5 years ago. It's a fucking ripper.
Yeah.
You will disagree with me vehemently on this, I suspect, but I would love them to remake this in the same style as the Link's Awakening remake.
Oh. Yeah, I couldn't care less about that, but some people did remake it in color. There's okay. like a DX version that's like a fan version of it.
Right.
That is a bit of an upgrade.
A souped up version of this, because it's just, it's really vibey. It's not, it doesn't have any of the like Mario stuff that you know from other games.
Not really,
set in this like other weird, it's the introduction of Wario, so it's got a new weird bad guy in it. You go to the moon, it's got an overworld map, which I remember being like, super impressive for a little handheld game.
The progression of them from like Super Mario Land 1 to 2 of how much chunkier and thicker and bigger they've been able to make all of like the sprites and everything.
Yep.
How much smoother and more closely it comes to being a console level game.
Yep.
Is really impressive. Same with a lot of these, like they, you know, Nintendo, as Nintendo does, takes a lot of their more successful console things and makes a different version of them for the Game Boy. You got Link's Awakening
yep.
on there, which we've talked about heaps recently because of the remaster.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great game at the time.
And it starts with them Zelda trying game. To do, as I said, people know this, plenty of people know this, it started with them trying to do a remake of, or not a remake, but port A Link to the Past
yeah.
onto the Game Boy, and then just ends up becoming its own,
mm.
again, similar to Mario Land 2, set outside of the realm of the console versions of the game, just set in a completely different space, its own weird standalone thing with its own weird characters in it,
yeah.
different bad guy.
But still a translation of that gameplay. Well, all those first four Zelda games, though, were pretty different from one another.
True, yeah.
Because
Link to the Past, this is a SNES game, but we might as well talk about it now, is such a huge fucking game on the Super Nintendo that I love that game still. And that becomes the actual blueprint for that style of adventure game for like the next 10 fucking years.
Yeah.
Especially 2D ones. You even get games on like the PS1, like someone called Alundra. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's basically just Zelda.
Yeah.
So that was really cool in the Game Boy. The second Metroid game comes out on the Game Boy, which again got a remake not that long ago on the 3DS. That game was fine.
Never played it.
It's okay. It's those first two Metroid games don't hang up as well as Metroid, Super Metroid.
Right, I was going to say, what is the second Metroid game just called Metroid 2?
It's called Metroid 2 Return of Samus.
Oh, I always thought that Super Metroid was Metroid 2.
No, Super Metroid is Metroid 3. The Metroid Fusion is Metroid 4. Metroid Prime 1, 2, and 3 are prequels, I believe, to Super Metroid.
Okay, and do I have to buy the CD add-on to play any of them?
That's the beauty of Metroid. No.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Because at some point they decided not to put those games out anywhere, really.
Yeah.
And you still can't get them on anything modern. There, people want a Metroid Prime. Anyway, we'll talk about Metroid Prime in fucking 10 years.
Yes. Yep.
Wario Land is big.
Yes.
Pokemon is the biggest Game Boy game for sure. That doesn't start happening till the late 90s, though.
Oh, okay.
So let's avoid, we'll tiptoe a fucking round that, even though we're talking about the Game Boy.
Yes.
Yep. As you mentioned, Wario Land, again, such a strange move. You've got this Mario Land 3, and instead you're making the main character the bad guy from the last one. Mm. Just a weird move. Donkey Kong 94.
It's like Terminator 2.
Yeah, it is.
Donkey Kong 94.
That's the best game on the Game Boy.
I've never played it.
It's so fucking good.
I've always heard it's really good.
It's like a little puzzle game, cross a platformer. You get hundreds of little puzzle stages where you've got a, you know, similar to the arcade game Donkey Kong, you climb around a set screen, but it's a lot more complex. You're picking up enemies and throwing them around. It's really, really good.
It's kind of a cool, which I could be wrong about this, but I don't really know too many other times that's happened where it's like taken this, you know, we talked in a previous episode about arcade games being ported onto the consoles and how they're pretty direct.
Sure.
You know, it's just trying to recreate the experience of like, now you've got all the time, you don't have to put coins in, you can try and get a high score till the cows come home.
Yep.
But instead of doing that, kind of taking it and working it into an actual thing with progression and levels, like using those core fundamental mechanics. I can't really think of too many other examples of taking like a classic arcade cabinet and giving it a bit more relevance to it being, having access to it whenever you want.
Yeah.
Definitely. This is like a sequel to it or a completely separate game almost.
Mm. Yeah.
It's very, very cool.
They also, there's Donkey Kong Land comes out, which is a port of Donkey Kong Country on the Super Nintendo, which, you know, obviously looks incredibly scaled down. But I remember having a copy of it and it does a fucking great job of looking for what it's doing, the hardware it's working on. It does a really good job of mirroring it as best it can.
And for most Game Boy games, that was sort of the template, is that here's this console game and we're going to make a smaller version of it. Even with some of the ones we talked about, that is what they're doing for most of these games.
Yep.
Donkey Kong Land did stand out as being a better one of that because, like, a lot of there's so much bullshit on the fucking Game Boy.
Right? Yep.
With, like, I played DuckTales 2 on the Game Boy, I think, which is a lot. It's fine, but it's not as good as the NES version. All the, like, FIFAs and Maddens and shit get ported over to it in these terrible ways.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine that.
The Game Boy is, like, the biggest home for like the movie tie-in shithouse game.
The shovelware. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I had a lot of I remember always being drawn to the Simpsons video games around this era.
Terrible time for that.
Knowing that they're bad, but they really churned them out. And they all kind of like took place in this kind of like weird sort of fucked up parallel universe Simpsons.
But like Moe's always trying to fight you.
Exactly, yeah. Like aliens are invading. So, just like all this stuff that would never happen on the show.
So what are they? Because I know about Bart versus the Super Mutants. Is that
Bart
what it's called?
Bart versus the Space Mutants.
The Space Mutants.
Bart versus the World. Yeah. We're both on the NES.
So those are, I think,
Bart
the only...
Bart versus Predator.
Requiem is the sequel. I am only familiar with those first two. I know that there are a bunch of other weird Simpsons games, but...
There was a Game Boy one called Escape from Camp Deadly, where it's basically... I don't know where it relates in the timeline to the Camp Krusty episode, but it's kind of a similar thing. You're at a dodgy summer camp and you and Bart and Lisa having to escape.
Right.
There's like Bart versus the Juggernauts, which was kind of like
never even
a bunch
of
like kind of mini game, like almost California game style, where Bart's entered like this gladiators style kind of thing. All terrible. They really pumped them out. Every time I saw a new one on the shelf, I knew it was going to be just pure dog shit, but I couldn't help myself. I was just like,
you
Simpsons mania.
That time when you stole Bart versus the fucking whatevers, and then your mum got real mad at you.
Yeah.
I remember with the Game Boy having a Jurassic Park game that was, again, not very good at all, and just this weird adaptation of the movie. That was always the thing with those movie adaptations, where just a bunch of bullshit that never happened in the movie.
Yeah.
You remember that scene in Jurassic Park where there's a stampede of triceratopses? Love replaying that part in the game.
Oh, Bart and the Beanstalk. That's similar to you, Adam. That was a game that I played on a family drive from Melbourne to Queensland.
Right.
Hammered that thing in the back of the car. Again, just Jack and the Beanstalk, but you're Bart,
dude.
For some weird reason.
I've seen a lot of animated GIFs on porn websites of Bart, Jack and the Beanstalk.
I was just going to say,
feel like we've all been
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, this has been like a horny, I don't know if it's an isolation thing or whatever, but I feel like there's been too much, I'm not going to mention it again.
Too much sexual references.
Kirby, of course, debuts on the Game Boy.
Yes.
I think so, yeah. And then there's
Game
an
Boy
NES
okay.
adaptation of the Game Boy game, which is short and not great.
Okay.
Mm.
Kid Boy Dracula. Have you played that?
Nah, that's a Castlevania game, basically, I think.
Spin-off kind of thing.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a lot of shovelware. It's a lot of kid-focused stuff, the Game Boy especially, but it all does very, very well. And yeah, when we get into the fucking Pokemon phenomenon.
Yeah.
Next week.
And this is, again, just such a strange thing of the era where, you know, I'm not certainly not reading magazines, video game magazines at this point.
Right.
So I remember first discovering video game magazines and being like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense. It's a way of finding out what's good and what's bad. Without just rolling the dice on like...
Where's their Simpsons game section?
Mum's going to buy you one of these every 6 months. Like, you got to make this purchase count. Like, I remember just being given a game as a gift and knowing in the back of my head, this is kind of shit, but this is it for a while, so I'm just going to have to make the best of it.
Going back to Game Boy games with how simple they look and how, you know, the irritatingness of the beepy music now, it is weird to think how much fucking time I put into those with what, I like, your standards of quality for this sort of thing, how they change over time. It's the strangest feeling.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I remember, because I never had a Game Boy, or I did maybe, like, at the very end of their run.
Right.
And, like, got Pokemon Red on a Game Boy Color or something like that.
Right.
So, like, ages down the track. But, like, going to a family friend's house and seeing their Game Boy and seeing, I think, Wario Land and Donkey Kong Land on it, and just being like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is like a magical thing. Never heard of these games. Don't really understand how to play them. Obviously, we know they don't look great, but at the time, it was still like, this is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, just I remember like the sheer fact of being able to have it portable, just not being able to believe that I had a thing where I could just sit in the car and play this machine as long as I had a huge supply of AA batteries.
Yeah, as long as you lived in a battery factory, you could do
and
it.
And had perfect lighting conditions available to you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was the other fucking thing, yeah. They weren't backlit until the fucking DS or something,
right?
Technically. So, right.
Did you ever have one of those
The visor strap-on thing?
Magnifying glass with the light in it?
There was, you could fucking jam it into this thing like Voltron where it was like a screen that magnified it, a weird little joystick that went over the D-pad to make that worse.
Yeah.
Two bigger buttons that went over the regular buttons. I think like double speakers. It was this fucking awful thing.
Yeah, wanting the speakers to make the shit music louder. Yeah. And also the idea that, yeah, you need a joypad because it's like no game on this thing has more than two directions of movement.
Yeah.
Even the up and down on the D-pad is probably a bit much.
You got the worm lights as well, the book light looking things.
Right.
Yeah, damn. Take me back.
People living in the moment.
So the Mega Drive was also out in the 80s, but big in the 90s. What's your guys' experience IRL, which means I really like to hear about it.
Okay.
With the Mega Drive.
Same as the Game Boy. Played it at friend's house. We just had a NES all through this era, basically.
Yeah.
Occasionally had the chance to go over to a mate's place and play a little Mortal Kombat.
Ooh. Damn.
Which I would have been banned from playing at my own home if we had one.
Power Rangers was that for me. I never got to watch Power Rangers at home because I started punching my brother when I watched it. So,
sure,
like,
okay.
It was the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which color were you pretending you were while you were doing that?
I think I was like Sonic original character where I'm like, I'm the orange Power Ranger.
Hell
I made up a new one.
Hell yes.
I'm Rainbow Power Ranger. I've got all of their powers.
Hell yes. Yeah, I had a friend at school who had a Mega Drive, and then when I eventually got a Super Nintendo quite late on in its life cycle, I just felt like I was getting a bit bored of it. I was just very interested in having a Mega Drive of my own, so I put a thing in the trading post saying I was up for trading my Super Nintendo for a Mega Drive. I traded my Super Nintendo.
Young
for
Mega,
a Mega
Drive
Drive.
Seeking similar.
And had the got it home, plugged it in and was like, wow, it's a whole new world. And then within a month, I think I went, I've made a huge mistake.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm the same where I ended up fucking getting a Mega Drive somehow. I think we got it off of the same cousin who gave us the Atari.
Right.
Something like that. We had some rich cousins and we suckled at that teat whatever we could.
You've talked about this a lot, this cousin in the Knox family tree. Yeah. It's just the trickle-down effect
for your household. It proves every economic theory that I've ever thought to be wrong is that if you've got a rich enough cousin who gives a little enough shit about their possessions because they know they can replace them, you can probably steal. So I don't remember how it got, but we ended up having a Mega Drive after a Super Nintendo.
Right.
And I don't think that the Mega Drive, and I know that this will be controversial, is very good at all.
I
don't have many games on it that I consider to be any of my favorites.
So what are the main games that are coming out for the Mega Drive?
You've got your Sonics, of course. Those are the big boys, at least culturally at the time.
First Sonic on the the Mega Drive, yep. not the Master System?
No, no, no. He's a Mega Drive man. 1991, 92, and 93, I believe, for 1, 2, and 3. Right. No, 94 for 3. And then you got Sonic and Knuckles, which is like that weird cartridge. It has a cartridge slot on top of it.
Right.
That you can put the old ones on top of and you can play as Knuckles in these old games.
Yep. Right, right.
You've got like fucking Toe Jam and Earl.
Oh, yes.
A lot of maybe arcade games that people have more fondness for than I ever did that translated over, like fucking Shinobi.
Right.
And whatever. Earthworm Jim. But a lot of these come to the Super Nintendo, as well.
Right. You've got the two different Aladdins that come out. There's like one sure. or there's like right. two different ones. There's Sega make a bunch of Disney games. They make like World of Illusion, Castle of Illusion.
Oh yeah,
they're well liked in retrospect, I think, as well. People are really yeah. into those. Fantasy Star is the role playing series, and like Shining something.
I think with a lot of Sega stuff, when I've gone back and tried to play it from this era, I like the vibe of the games more than I like the actual gameplay. I kind of like the weird 90s-ish kind of palette
that's
graphic style and music style. More than I like the actual, like, how they feel to play. Right. I don't think holds up as well.
I'm the exact opposite of that. Alex Kidd was another one. Where I think they look and sound fucking awful.
Really?
To the point where it, like, gives me a headache.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
The sound chip that was on the Mega Drive, and I know a lot of people like it because it sounds cool. It sounds very different to anything else.
Right.
As like a synthesizer, basically. People still use it, especially for making fun bass lines.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it like a separate set of MIDI sounds that it uses or something?
It's, whatever the hardware is, it sounds different. And it's hard to emulate even. Like Mega Drive emulators won't get the sound exactly right. It's a big thing for people who are into the Mega Drive.
Right.
And I think even at its best, it sounds like shit.
Right.
It's bouncy and tinny in a way that really fucking bothers my ears.
Well, both of those are words that I associate with Sonic as a franchise.
Sure.
And it is like
that
the
aluminium
music,
hedgehog.
The music of Sonic, to me, like, it symbolizes Sega in this sort of era.
And it's that slappy bass that it's always got the boom, bang, bang, bang. Oh, well, I'm not going to be able to fucking pretend to be a Mega Drive. Why'd I even try to do that? But there's a harshness to the visuals and the audio that come out of the Mega Drive that always rubbed me the wrong way.
Interesting.
I said it sort of is emblematic of what Sonic is, but it is what Sega is in my mind. It's that attitude.
Yeah.
It's that sort of like
brash.
Exactly. Yeah. That's early 90s attitude.
They lean into the 90s aesthetics with like everything that they're doing, the marketing, the design of it, like Final Fight and all that kind of stuff. Mm.
They're a lot more focused on bringing the arcade home and that type of vibe as well.
Yeah,
all the Streets of Rages and shit are on the Mega Drive and then the Saturn. And that's also just a style of game that I've never been as into as like an RPG or a platformer, which the SNES has. So
they did have a few good racing games from memory. There was, I wish I could remember what it was, but there are a few of those ones that were very simple, you know, that sort of just...
Micro Machines was fucking great.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah.
But the aesthetic of the Mega Drive never clicked with me, and the style of games that were on there for the most part weren't my favorites as well. So I was never a Mega Drive man.
I
was never a Genesis Jim.
I was curious about them, but I was never like, oh, I wish that we owned one of these.
Right.
What I was hoping our family would buy would be a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
I wasn't like wishing for a Mega Drive for Christmas. That wasn't happening for me. I remember that.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember going to my friend's house and him having a Mega Drive and playing Street Fighter 2 and thinking that it was cool that the controller had the 6 buttons instead of the 4.
But that was only for, that was like a new type of controller that they brought out because of Street Fighter.
Was it really?
The normal one had 3.
Ah, okay. Mm. Interesting. Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was always just ABC on the Mega Drive, but then they brought out XYZ on top.
That's right.
Man, ABC. It's so funny how XYZ on the Mega Drive is a sentence that makes no sense in huge parts of the world.
Yeah.
You mean XYZ on the Genesis? Yeah, I'm Mark Maron. Every time I'm American, it's like a gruff Maron-ish. Man, but yeah, so not my favorite one personally, but, you know, I understand, of course, that is to do with preference.
It's,
should the console wars have raged on, I know where I would have fought.
The only franchise that persists, that launched on the Sega Mega Drive, at least I think, is Mortal Kombat, right?
No, that was an arcade game, so it doesn't count.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
And that came out on the Super Nintendo. Not half of these games as well. That's a crazy thing with console war stuff, is that most games came out on both.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
had some differences, though, was one of the most bizarre things that we don't really get anymore.
Yes.
If you got the Mega Drive version of Street Fighter 2, it would be wildly different in significant ways to yep. the Super Nintendo version of it. And that was the case with a whole bunch of different games. So that did also stoke this fire of which side do you land on?
Because Nintendo would frequently like remove blood from
games.
That
was part of it. They did that with Mortal Kombat, but like the way that things looked and sounded on both systems was different.
Right.
Yeah.
And the way that they played was different as a result of that, because just how low the power was in these compared to arcade machines especially meant that concessions were made in both directions.
Right.
So Street Fighter 2 is a great example, and a game that like dominates the early half of the 90s. Because so on the Mega Drive, Street Fighter 2 The World Warrior was the name of like the first conversion, and then fucking the Super Nintendo got like Street Fighter 2 The New Champions or some shit.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I believe that there was a difference in the number of characters. Right. That's the one. Mm-hmm. And then the Super Nintendo got Street Fighter 2 Turbo, but the Mega Drive didn't, which was like a faster playing version of it, I think with more characters, or Super Street Fighter. Man, I can't believe how well I've summarized this entire era.
They churn out about 8 versions of this
There's heaps.
One game over the first. Yeah,
and then in the arcade, Street Fighter 2 Turbo is Capcom reacting to a hack that people have made on the arcade board of this to just increase the speed.
Right.
And that was very popular. And so the Capcom went, all right, well, here's our fucking one that does the same thing. Now you have to buy it from us again and we get the money.
It's insane. There's like, I don't think that people listening quite can probably wrap their heads around this if they weren't alive at this time.
The people talking about it.
But it's not like doing side-by-side comparisons of Tomb Raider on Xbox One and PS4 and being like, the frame rate on this is this.
Mm.
And the lighting on this, it's like different games with different like follow-up versions.
There's there's like I said before, there's two versions of Aladdin that are made by different developers and are completely different games. Mm. Yeah, it's so much more than just like, oh, this game looks a little worse on the Switch because it's lower powered hardware.
Yeah.
And maybe a little sluggish, but is still trying to be the same game.
Yeah. I did like the game Another World on the Mega Drive.
Yes.
I never played that, but
I think I must have played it emulated as an adult, but because it sort of like looks similar to a Prince of Persia, but it's set in a big sci-fi world, is that what it was?
Yeah, you get like teleported to an alien world and it's very trial and error, like walk through these screens and figure out the exact right order you need to do
right,
stuff
cool.
before you can move on. But it was cool and it looked great for the time.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for all of us, as you can probably tell by how much Nintendo has carried over into being like a thing that we like a lot now, the Super Nintendo was fucking enormous for me. A Super Mario World.
Yeah.
Can classic. I just throw that name out there right now and see how you boys react?
Yeah.
Didn't big play reactions.
It. Didn't play it. Didn't play it. Didn't own it. Didn't have a SNES.
Yeah, you don't give a shit about Mario, do you, really?
Not really, no. Yeah. I'm in the same position as I was with a Mega Drive. Just was observing it, you know, occasionally looking over some shoulders like, oh, what's that game?
Yeah.
But never really played anything on it except for Mario Paint.
That's fucking insane.
Great.
I believe like a friend or like a family friend, they had like a young daughter and that's like the only game they got for her because it's all, you know, they wanted her to play.
Yeah.
And I remember loving Mario Paint, making heaps of songs on it. It was sick.
It's so funny that Nintendo look at the PC and go, yeah, we should have a mouse.
Yeah.
We should have a mouse on our thing.
Yeah. There are a few different dumb like peripherals for the Super Nintendo as well, because the NES obviously had a bunch like the Power Glove and the Rob and whatever.
Yeah,
I had a Super Scope.
I always wanted one of them. Again, as we talked a lot about a lot of these things,
you put it over your shot. Fuck light guns, where you hold them in your hand.
Yeah,
this is a light bazooka.
Yeah, I always. This is one of those things that like we talked about. I can't remember like those older consoles from a couple of episodes ago, where I was unclear as to whether this ever even came out in this country. Because right, I never out. Saw one, never saw one in the shops.
John Howard would have banned it if he had his way.
And was it a pack-in game where you're Mario riding on Yoshi just shooting Goombas with a fucking bazooka?
It was the Super Scope 6 was the name of the game. And it was actually two games with three different modes. So it was a fucking lie. But there was one where you like shot missiles that were coming from one side of the screen before they got to the other side of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one, I think the Yoshi Safari one is what that's called. And that wasn't even packed in.
Right.
I think that might have been a separate game. But the big one for me was a game called Metal Combat.
Okay.
Where you are shooting at giant robots.
Nice.
And those robots, they've got pilots in them. Mm-hmm. And every pilot says some sassy bullshit to you. You're like, motherfucker, look at my shoulder. It is barely supporting the weight of this gun that I have bought as a child. Well, yeah. I haven't bought it because I don't understand the value of money yet. But, and neither do my parents, evidently, because they bought me this fucking rocket launcher.
A toy gun.
It was great.
Yeah, I was always jealous of this specifically. I think, again, a family friend had this. And I think by that point, maybe I had a NES with just the normal light gun. And I was like,
The Zapper? Was that the Zapper? The NES Zapper?
Is that what it was called?
I think so. For Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've just felt so inferior. Yeah. So what was that game?
Metal Combat Falcon's Revenge.
Holy hell shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me with that name?
I just want to see
what
the actual gameplay is.
Mm. It's like 2D. The robots move from side to side.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Cool. Fuck. This looks awesome.
Yeah.
This looks rad.
Ugh. This looks very Sega-ish. I've got to say, aesthetically.
But Nintendo were doing what Sega didn't with this particular game.
There was a
Mega Drive. Yeah. There was a Mega Drive gun called the Enforcer.
Oh,
there
Jesus.
Was a game called Lethal Enforcers. Okay. It was like a big blue fucking revolver, and that game fucking sucked. So I loved light guns. We'll talk about them more in the second half of the 90s. It's my biggest thing that I miss about older games is that you just don't get them anymore.
Just looking this up on Google, it's given me for some reason it's popped up with the option to be the first person to write a review of it.
Of Metal Combat.
It's reminded me that because I'm logged in, I will be posting publicly. So I'm going to give it 5 stars. I'm going to say my friend Adam likes this game.
Yep.
Accurate?
That's a very fair review.
Yeah, okay.
Opinion.
Here we go. No turning back now. Post.
Wow.
Thank you for your review. Your feedback helps others decide which video games to buy.
Oh, yeah.
I like the idea of someone being on the fence about Metal Combat Falcon's Revenge in 2020. Should I go in on this game from 1993?
Like the cost of getting all that shit these days would be astronomical. Yeah. So in reality, no. As a purchasing decision, I absolutely recommend against it.
But hey, one review and it's 5 stars. That's 100%.
Yeah, yeah. If you're on the fence, you're like, I've got to buy it now.
The tomato meter's going off on this one.
A perfect game.
It was a sequel.
World's first perfect game.
Must play.
Yeah.
It was a sequel as well to a game that I don't remember the name of, but it wasn't. I don't believe the first one was called Metal Combat.
Right.
I think it was called something else.
Battle Clash?
Battle Clash. Ooh. That was it. I never played Battle Clash.
What about Bazooka Blitzkrieg? Did you have that?
Jesus Christ.
What the hell is this? Is this the same? Is this another thing?
I reckon Bazooka Blitzkrieg will be different to the other titles that you've said, yes.
No, I mean, is it in
Bazooka
the same...
Bazooka Blitzkrieg is the other name for Metal Combat Falcon's
Revenge. Oh,
God,
you know what I mean. No, is this in the same series?
For the same
series?
Peripheral? Oh,
no,
right.
No, I think it was only those two.
Okay.
Either way, that was very fun. The Mario Paint fucking mouse was a good time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed playing Mario Paint too. The little fly swatting minigame.
Yes, which was featured on Amazing, the Australian kids game show.
As was Super Mario Kart.
Oh, well, let's talk more about Mario Paint. Surely we're not going to focus on Mario Kart at all.
I don't think there's anything else that I would happily say about Mario Paint. I don't think I could draw that out more. Draw, paint, fill in... Bucket. We're done with that. But
Daytona was the game I was trying to remember for Sega, the racing game. Yeah. That is a game that still persists.
How did you pronounce it?
Daytona.
I believe it's pronounced Daytona.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. I don't remember if that's how they said it in the game. That was great. That one having the game over. Yeah. I still think that that's the funniest fucking like line reading.
But
we just want you to say game over. He's like, I'm going to add a little spice to it.
Yeah, it's the early 90s, mate. Come on. What am I going to do? Not amp it up?
I think that's Daytona.
Yeah, so Sega, like, they still have... They own arcades in Japan. That's still their thing. And Daytona is in every arcade in the world, basically.
In the 90s, they brought out, like, their Model 2, or, like, the early 90s, their Model 2 board and shit, which was, like, the first kind of 3D-looking games that looked really good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Sega was pushing harder in the arcades than arguably they were with consoles.
Mm.
Yep.
Sorry.
I was just going to go back to the classics of the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was one...
Mario Kart is worth talking about.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's one more riff. This motherfucking cord. This cord makes me crackly. You'd think they'd be able... In the world where compact discs exist, you'd think they'd be able to get this technology
right. I got a peripheral for you, the super crackly cord.
The Super Game Boy was really cool.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
It was a cartridge you plugged into your SNES, 32X style, and you could put a Game Boy game in that and play the Game Boy game on your TV.
And I'll tell you what, the Game Boy games that were enhanced for it, that had their own border and where the colors would change level to level, heaven. Oh. But then when you went back to playing an old Game Boy game where you would have to set the border yourself and change the colors yourself if you went level to level, you felt like a peasant.
When you turned it on, you'd have to hold like up and B or whatever to get a different color palette for them if it didn't have one programmed in. But games like Donkey Kong... that came out post the Super Game Boy coming out, they had these pre-built borders that would surround the small Game Boy screen and the TV.
Man.
Yeah.
Felt like a fucking magician putting that
pretty fucking cool stuff. My next door neighbor, his dad did a lot of work in America, so they had an American SNES.
Oh, right.
I remember just
awful color
scheme,
worse.
Or like that's buttons all purple. Yeah. And the cartridges are like really square. They're really angular, whereas the PAL ones were a bit
not
more
not even
rounded.
Slightly square. An actual square.
Yeah,
like
right. Wow.
A harsh edge. Fine. You know how some squares you're like, wow, it's not that square. Because you might be looking at like a triangle, I guess, or a circle.
Or an oval even, maybe. Yeah, sometimes. It's a different...
But yeah, he would have all these like weird games that I was unaware of the existence of.
Right.
And, like, his dad would just go to American department stores and bring him back.
Well, because this is a definitely... More so, I would say, with the SNES than with the Mega Drive, the era of not getting a fuckload of games over from Japan. Like, all the Final Fantasies, like 2, 3, and 5 do not come out in the West. And so 4 and 6 are renamed 2 and 3 on the SNES. That's the big one.
I could be wrong about this, but I have a feeling that Super Mario RPG never came out in Australia.
No, I doubt it as well.
Mm. That was one that my neighbor had that I was just what the fuck is this?
That
it
definitely
just looked so weird. And yeah, I thought it was really cool.
I've been thinking heaps about going back and playing that because there's a new Paper Mario coming out.
Mm.
Going through those games, fucking figuring out what I think of them. Giving it a bit of a crack on. Anyway.
What else we got on the SNES?
Super Mario Kart is a weird one because the limit to two players is pretty much across the board with every console at this point, I think. I don't think you start getting the fucking multi-taps and all that sort of thing until the SNES and the Saturn.
Right.
I mean, sorry, the PlayStation and the Saturn.
Yeah.
Could be wrong about that.
I believe...
I'm wrong. Micro Machines 2. Micro Machines 2 had a fucking cartridge with two controller ports on it.
Hello.
On the Mega Drive.
Right.
So you could have four players.
Yeah, okay.
I reckon Bomberman, there may have been some kind of
maybe
peripheral for as well. That was a game that I loved back in the day, that series.
Yeah.
Haven't gone back to it in a very long time. I kept meaning to get the Switch version just to see if that mechanic still holds up. But I love, as a multiplayer, just being like, oh, cool, this game where you kind of sneak around, you kind of have to like fuck over your opponent, like seems really fun.
It's such a simple concept, but one of those ones where it's like it's hard to fuck up as well. It's just so tight, such a tight little gameplay thing.
Yeah,
the missionary of video games. Simple but effective. I need to get out of the house. I can't. So the thing that was always weird to me about that original Super Mario Kart,
as he said, he needs to get out of the house, listeners. He whipped his penis out, and started shaking it around.
The original Super Mario Kart always had the split screen on.
Yeah,
right.
Like you'd either see that sort of drawn out map down the bottom if you were playing single player, or it'd be two player. That thing of the mode 7 on Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Was that that was built into it, or was that a separate chip? There were separate chips inside cartridges sometimes. Like with Star Fox had that Super FX chip.
yeah.
in the cartridge that made it sort of 3D.
Mm.
I guess the Mode 7 thing was just a way of doing scaling on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, it's in the console.
Because like Pilot Wings was a launch game
yeah.
and that had it
right.
and was showing it off. And that shit looked incredible at the time.
Right.
Well, and Mario, right. Super Mario World kind of uses it where it does the kind of like the fade-ins on the levels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's using it, not really in any practical
Yoshi's
way.
Yoshi's Island,
like
Yoshi's Island does it
heaps.
Yeah. Right, yeah. right.
So what's it? It's a way of easily stretching and scaling sprites.
Yeah, I think it was I watched a really good video on how it worked once and I've forgotten 90% of it. So here is a terrible recollection of how it works. Mm-hmm. Inside of the Super Nintendo are 100 small Marios. And they're moving around
yep.
really quick trying to tell the screen what to say.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Cool.
No, it's a sprite, basically. It's a big
it's
sprite.
Dealing
that is
with planes, right?
It's
planes
tilted and rotated
and
stuff.
And yeah.
It just lets the game manipulate the sprite in a way that it wasn't able to before.
That's all
you
it
can't
is.
Can't look at it from a different angle and rotate it and stretch it and yeah. skew it where previously it had to be like a set size.
Right.
Yeah. More or less.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it
hey,
really
and
cool.
I hadn't even watched the video. Imagine how thorough that would have been if I'd seen this video.
I had a Zoom call with Miyamoto himself. That was the video that I watched. But I don't know Japanese, so it wasn't that helpful.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, all that shit looked great on it. The Donkey Kong games looked mm-hmm. really good at the time, even though I don't think they're good games still. They're too floaty and the controls feel bad. But all the visually things became very impressive
yeah.
to me.
Super Metroid in 1994.
One of the best games that's ever been made. Fuck, yeah. it's good.
We all played this like 2 years ago. We did it for our Patreon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That was the first time I ever played it as well. Mm. Sick.
It's so
good. It's
good.
It's
so
really
much,
good.
Yeah, so much like incredible atmosphere
mm.
packed into this, yeah, quite, yeah, this 16-bit game.
Yeah, very creative. I think, yeah, I never played the originals either, or all those early Castlevania games that were similar.
Super Metroid did it.
Yeah.
yeah.
The modern, like what you call a Metroidvania, again, is just Metroid.
Yeah.
It's done
yeah.
all the fucking heavy lifting with that genre, and I don't know why Vania gets to come on and tag along at the end, even though those games are good.
We talked a lot in the 80s ones about how each new game that comes along then in the early 80s is like is a new genre.
Yeah.
You platformer. They're inventing sure. genres as they bring out a game. Not as much of that in the Super Nintendo.
Mm.
You could definitely say it about Super Metroid, that it's the birth of this kind of like... It's
more like the solidification. Same mm. as Link to the Past, I think, where these things that came along during the NES era, it's like we figured out how to do it. Boom.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then the next generation, they kind of have to figure out how to translate that stuff to 3D. But a lot of those 3D translations are still very recognizable as being solidified here, especially the RPG or the Japanese RPG at the very least.
Yes.
Right.
The yep. Super Nintendo is huge for them. I really like that type of game and a bunch of these big hitters for me. Chrono Trigger is a fucking awesome game.
Mm-hmm.
If no one's ever played that, it still holds up to this day, in my opinion. That's a great fucking game. There's a game called Terranigma. That was one of the rare ones that came out in Europe and the US, but didn't come out in... I mean, sorry, came out in Europe, but not the US.
Okay.
Oh, right.
So that was one of the few that we got to say, like, oh, well, have you ever heard of this? And they were yeah. like, no, we don't care.
yeah.
But that was pretty good.
Just quickly, where is Chrono Trigger easily findable legitimately in 2020? What's it on?
Like
has it been
Steam
re-released on something?
Or some okay. shit? Maybe I'm wrong about that. I think there might be. There was definitely a DS re-release.
Okay. I think that's what I'm thinking. I did have a memory of it being ported onto something.
I feel like there must be a fucking version of it out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty easy to get a hold of all of these games.
Worth pointing out, 1993, a little game called Super Mario All-Stars comes along.
Right.
Yeah.
Notable because it's the first time Nintendo dip their little toes into the sweet remaster pool.
Oh, yes.
You know what we can do? We yeah. can. We. You know what? Don't put them all into one cartridge, boys. When we do this again, space
yeah,
them out.
Yeah, yeah,
each
yeah.
one of these yeah. could be its own game.
Yeah. And then at some point they were like, you know what would be better than even put them out? Ignore them.
Put something out if it came out 2 years ago onto a different console.
Yeah.
Something that came out 15 years ago
yeah.
that's never been on anything else, just don't worry yeah. about it.
Yeah,
if they're
yeah.
actively asking for it, that means they don't want it because they're going to buy the old one. still, if they want it. Earthbound was another RPG that I know you like, Tommy, that I never really mucked around with.
I haven't played too much of it, but yeah, I should make an effort to go all the way through it, because it's definitely, gameplay-wise, it's very JRPG, but it's just got such a weird, unique personality and tone and design to it.
The fact really that the characters as well have become like staple Nintendo characters for a game that, yeah, did it come out here?
Probably. It's hard to know which ones came out in Australia at this point.
Because there's like, it was called Mother?
It's yeah. Mother 3?
Mother 2. Earthbound is Mother 2.
Right.
Mother 1, they did re-release on like the Wii U, translated, and they called it Earthbound 0.
Oh, wow.
And then Mother 3 was a Game Boy Advance game.
That's never been translated? Yeah, and that's the big one that people are always going, for the love of God.
Right.
Do a... You can get like fan translated ROMs and stuff of it, but never had a Western release.
Mm. F-Zero. Sorry, I just looked at that. I needed to yell it out.
Make a new fucking F-Zero game.
Yes.
Fuck me.
It's insane. Make a good new Star Fox game.
Yep.
Because how... Did they fuck up that last one?
Ugh.
Seems like it should be pretty simple, right?
I don't know, maybe.
Well, no, because they felt like their first party stuff had to use the gamepad in interesting ways. That's what fucked them.
Yeah. Everything else was like, oh, it looks all right. But
if that had just come out straight up on the Switch, it'd probably be really good.
Mm.
F-Zero, it's bizarre to me that they have let that slip by the wayside.
Jumping way ahead, but I remember playing the GameCube one was the last time they did one.
Right. Yeah.
And just going, this absolutely shreds. This is so fucking good.
There was like a Game Boy Advance one after that, I think. But it was they were all around the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a bunch of fucking classics. A million people have talked a million things about what's on the Super Nintendo. Very easy to look that stuff up. But just all of this just hits a little bit more of a sweet spot for me aesthetically and in terms of how I feel the gameplay is. Maybe it's just the controller or something.
Right.
But everything felt a bit tighter on the Super Nintendo than it ever did on the Mega Drive to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I'm a fucking asshole, which is, I'm sure, what people who loved Sega during the 90s are assuming.
Did you ever play Stunt Race FX?
Get the fuck out of here with asking me if I ever played Stunt Race FX. You think I'm not going to fucking fuck with any FX chip game? Star Fox, Stunt Race FX, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Probably more. Star Fox 2.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually.
What was Stunt Race FX just a game? A racing game, I mean?
It's a racing game, but it's got that weird Star Fox, like, 3D.
Yeah, yeah,
but essentially, like
11 polygons.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Runs at about 4 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a Nintendo-made game. Yeah, it's a Nintendo-made game that, you know, they're attempted a new, like, the, you know, the
you're jumping, like, off of ramps and shit like that.
Mm. With little humanized cars that they clearly thought would be a new franchise, and they've
Dirt
just
Track them. FX.
Right, oh, okay. Because there was should we move on to a different platform?
There's one significant platform to cover here.
Yeah, the personal computer.
Probably the biggest one for me of the 90s, even more than the SNES.
Well, that was it. Like, I had a NES for most of the 90s, and I had a PC, and I played a fuckload of games on the PC. There was a game called Stunt, I believe it was called, on the PC.
Right.
That was a racing game.
There was a game that came out before 1995 that if you pick any individual word in the dictionary,
mm-hmm,
a game came out with that name.
Yes. Definitely on DOS.
Yeah.
Stunt was a game where you could create your own tracks as well.
Right.
And it was sick. It was a little more simplistic than these graphics. It might have been, earlier. But, PC, I played heaps. A little game called Wolfenstein 3D came out in, I think, 91?
Yeah, that sounds right. Maybe 92?
I think Doom might have been 92.
Doom was 93. I want to throw out there.
Okay, all right.
There's ways of verifying this, but I'm not going to do it.
No, I put my phone down. But we were a Wolfenstein family. We weren't a Doom family. I don't think we ever owned it.
I watched my dad play through Wolfenstein.
Yep, same.
And told him, maybe the Nazis had a point and we should talk to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe like maybe they'll come around to our side if we just have a chat with them.
And he was
not
like,
that they had a point, but like maybe they, you know, hey, there's still people. We shouldn't punch them in the face.
Yeah, yeah. He had to tell you about the bazooka blitzkrieg and what that actually meant.
I remember being like, oh, no, but if we can converse with them, then maybe we'll be able. No, I told him to shoot the Nazis.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I sat like on a little chair next to Dad as he had a stubby after work and played Wolfenstein 3D, and I was like tense. I was scared by it. I was like, these guys are running around to try to shoot you.
You sit on my lap. I'm not surprised he had a stubby. Time to leave. I need to unlock these 50 doors in my house and get out. Yeah, those were huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then. I think Doom, because so maybe there's time to talk before we go into like DOS games. Doom especially around this time, and it had happened with Mortal Kombat, which we've sort of brushed on. Just to say, I don't think those early Mortal Kombat games are any good.
Right.
The violence in video games discussion and all that sort of stuff starts kicking off around this time. Night Trap comes out.
Oh,
on
yeah.
On like the Sega, on the Mega CD, I guess. Maybe it was an arcade game. Doom is another big one. Later on, we'll get even way bigger with what happens in Columbine in the late 90s.
Yeah.
But so like in the US, there's this huge fucking cultural moment where people are figuring out whether or not video games are like morally okay, whether it's what the level of violence that should be permittable or permissible in a video game is. And that establishes what the US still has, which is the ESRB, the Electronic Something Rating Board. Mm-hmm. It's weird that they put the S for something in there.
Standards.
All of video games are unrated. That's how much they were viewed as toys. They didn't have a rating system until the video game industry as a whole built this body and voluntarily made that so that the government wouldn't be the one to be doing those restrictions.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the ESRB to this day is like self-monitored.
Right.
And isn't a government thing.
Right. Which, it's an independent body. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of, and I guess it makes sense. Like, this is not Wowzers being like, oh no, the kids, they're being tainted by these. It's like, they're running around shooting people in this game. It should have a rating. I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah. It's weird that it took them that long to recognize it as an entertainment medium or whatever. Mm. But I absolutely agree with the fact that they should be rated.
Yeah.
For sure. And yeah, games like Doom and Wolfenstein are coming out to sort of make that point, I guess, at this point indirectly. Yeah. That the first-person shooter genre is invented, basically, with those games, or at least the same thing where it's solidified. And they're still good to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can play at least the original Doom. You can still play exactly that version, and it's still fucking really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd prefer to play the version where I'm shooting Barney Gumble. Thank you very much.
the fucking... Oh, man, that thought. Oh, yeah, id at the time. They'd also made... They'd made Commander Keen previous to that.
Yep.
Similar to how Epic Games would make Jazz Jackrabbit and then Unreal, id made Commander Keen and then Wolfenstein. And I love those Commander Keen games as well.
Yes, yeah, same.
Good platformers on the disc operating system.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz Jackrabbit as well was fun.
Yeah.
Then the other big genre that you get on the old DOS machines this time is the fucking adventure game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
The big hitter of the early 90s that fucked off pretty quickly come the late 90s.
Yeah.
Monkey Island. What about that?
Loved it.
Never played it.
Oh, really?
Never played a Monkey Island game. I've played the genre, but just this series specifically.
You're Sam and Max, right?
Sam and Max was my entry.
I think that's like 93.
It is. It's within the next. It's within this episode. I think at the time, in the early 90s, the only one of these I played was The Secret of Monkey Island.
Yeah.
I didn't play Day of the Tentacle. I didn't play Sam and Max. I didn't play the Indiana Jones game. Blade Runner was one of these as well. I don't know if it was in this exact era, but I only played Secret of Monkey Island. But that's okay because I think it might be the best one. It's certainly like the ultimate one, right?
Sure, it's like the easiest to view as the figurehead.
Yes.
The flagship for this type of thing.
Yeah.
The Curse of Monkey Island, which is the third one,
right,
is the best one out of that series, I think. That's the one with like the cartoony graphics. More than like the pixelated ones.
Right.
The fucking PC games are so far away ahead of console games at this point in time, where you've got like Wing Commander comes out in 1990, which is like, I'm pretty sure Mark Hamill is already in that one.
I think you're right, yeah.
And it's like full motion video with then like space combat. All these genres that are big in PC games in the early 90s kind of don't exist anymore in the same way. Like adventure games have made a bit of a comeback, but then you've got the space combat games are huge. Yeah. All of these Star Wars ones like X-Wing and TIE Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Real-time strategy games are basically gone now.
Yeah.
You don't get them anywhere near as much. And they were mm-hmm. fucking huge deals. Like, they figured out how to do this, I guess, going more into the late 90s. But, like, Westwood made Dune and Command and Conquer, and Blizzard made World of Warcraft all around the same-ish sort of time.
Yeah, Dune and Dune 2 are in the first half of the 90s.
Yeah. And, yeah, well, the original Warcraft is 94.
Yeah, right.
As well. And then, like, Civilization as well gets made. SimCity
2000, I think, is in 93 or 94.
Yeah, maybe. Damn, they must have been embarrassed when they fucking named that wrong. We thought it'd take us years to make this, but no, we got it done pretty quickly.
But these are, and like, yeah, just purely by the fact that the PC was mainly what I was playing, I was hugely into all of those games. Yeah. I loved Warcraft. I played Dune 2 at a friend's house, but really, really loved that. Like, we would sort of like switch out. Playing that, but got super, super into that. SimCity, I've always loved the city building game. Like, a lot of my tastes are formed in this era on the PC.
Sure, same, probably, because I love first-person shooters still.
Yeah, yeah.
And at this time, they were called Doom clones.
Yes.
Just like the genre was called either shoot 'em up if you were reading a British magazine mm-hmm. or a Doom clone if you weren't.
Yep.
And all of those ones around this time, Star Wars Dark Forces, Duke Nukem 3D comes out yep. later on. Fucking great fun.
Yeah.
That style of use the arrows on the keyboard first person shooter is still in some ways, or at least I think I enjoyed that more than controlling modern shooters now.
Right.
The mouse and keyboard thing that started with like Quake, the arrows and the style of like GoldenEye that was kind of an emulation of that.
Mm.
I had a lot of fun with that type of first-person shooter.
Yeah. Yeah. It was real good. I think the feeling...
I'm gonna die one day.
That...
It's all gone. All this is in the past.
Doom and Doom Eternal are specifically trying to recreate the feeling of playing those original first-person shooters.
Right. In the modern context.
Sure. Yeah. But they're not taking inspiration from, say, a Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which did influence every first-person shooter after that.
Yeah.
They're kind of skipping back a couple of decades.
Well, because that style of Call of Duty shooter now too, especially with the multiplayer stuff, you don't get the fast-paced arena games like Quake,
mm.
which again is second half of the 90s, but that type of game is kind of gone in favor of these other styles of multiplayer shooter games that, I don't know, at least don't hold enough nostalgia for me.
Right.
Maybe they are better and I'm just sort of thinking about these now and going like, oh, remember how fun it was to be in primary school?
Yeah.
And that's always the thing with this sort of stuff. It's like, do I like lemmings or did I like not having to think about money?
Ooh.
Mm.
I think I like lemmings.
Yeah.
Lemmings was good.
Yeah.
Lemmings was good.
I like lemmings.
Lemmings was cool.
Yeah. Lemmings, yeah. Another PC game.
Yeah. And that ended up going fucking everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, the problem is, what this is like almost an hour and a half, this episode, and I think all of us are deliberately trying to be quick about the games that we're talking about because there's so fucking many that I could spend an hour talking about each.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I think let's do a fucking another hour on Jazz Jackrabbit. Yeah. What do you say? Christmas Jazz?
Yeah.
Do you remember Jazz Jackrabbit?
Yes.
Christmas? They used to do Christmas games. That was around now.
Yes, yeah. It was.
Christmas Nights into Dreams?
Yes, that's right.
Oh.
Fuck. Why did they stop doing Christmas games? It's those fucking PC police and their war on Christmas, Jazz Jackrabbit.
Was that a thing? Was the Knights one a thing where the console had a clock in it and when you played it on Christmas or was it?
That was a separate disc for sure.
Okay. Mm.
There, in some way.
I know Jazz was exactly its own separate thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Playing a fucking game. All those Apogee ones like Monster Bash
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. Playing two levels of that or whatever and then it telling you like, mail into this address in Texas to buy the rest. You're like,
yeah,
never.
Yeah.
There's
Crystal Caves.
No way I'll ever do that.
Crystal Caves is one of those as well. A very simplistic but really cool, creepy sort of, well, not creepy. I found it creepy. A little platformer.
Yeah.
There were a few really good platformers for PC.
Biohazard. Not Resident Evil, but there was a game called Biohazard where you played as like basically Tom Selleck, he looked like, and you were shooting zombies You'd crashed your plane.
Oh, did that again look sort of like Another World?
Yeah.
Like,
Nah. But it was 2D. It was like a platformer.
Yeah.
There was one called Flashback that looked like Another World.
Right.
There are 850 million games that came out in the early 90s.
Yeah.
The format that we're doing this in now, where we're just kind of, ah, remember it, is not going to work for very long. Golden Axe.
Yeah.
Damn, there are a lot of good games. But anyway, yeah. In terms of the actual, the feeling of the era, things were very much, I think for a lot of people, DOS heavy, because a lot of families now had a family computer.
Yes.
And it was easy to get shareware games. SNES and Mega Drive, people kind of drew their lines between that. Game Boy was very popular. All the others flopped. But video games were very much back.
Oh, they were the biggest thing in the world.
They were what they are now. They were modern sort of, here's this, you know, you got your books, you got your movies, you got your video games.
Yep.
This third pillar of entertainment.
Yes.
But they'd become that by this point. So going into this next generation where these, and this already is happening by the mid 90s that the PlayStation is around and the Saturn is around by like 94. It like, there was already the feeling of, fuck, there's everything to play for here.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I think it's fair to say that with some exceptions, most notably PC games, but otherwise, games are still for kids. That's why there is a big outcry, a lot of media attention on it around the violent ones, is games are still for kids. Mostly kids are playing them. Parents are buying them for their kids.
Sure.
I think what happens in the second half of the 90s is a push towards, if not adults, maybe teens, but
Sony, we'll talk about this, but Sony absolutely are responsible for the world taking video games more seriously.
Agreed.
PC games, a lot of them were marketed to adults.
Flight Simulator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's for adults, but it's also for the type of adult that a lot of people aren't going to take seriously anyway. Games are either for kids or non-serious adults at
completely,
this point.
Yeah.
And then, Sony has the bright idea to fucking put him in a nightclub and everyone's like, damn, I guess Ecstasy's as good as PlayStation.
Yeah.
The two are tied in my mind. It's cool now. But we'll get into that next week.
Yeah.
Fuck, man, early 90s PC games. I want to just, let's start streaming some of this shit. We've started a Twitch thing. We're going to be doing more of that soon. What is it? Twitch.tv/filthycasualspod?
Yeah.
Go there at some point. I'm going to fucking play Doom.
Yeah, fuck. That's a great call. Oh, there's so many of these that I want to play.
Yeah.
The early 90s, man. What a time. Yep. And everyone was so, the world was going great. Everyone was so sure that everything was going to be fantastic forever going forward.
We had the kettle.
They'd done it.
We were happy.
Yeah.
They finally done it.
Every day we were chopping more and more doors into that intro sequence from Get Smart.
Yep.
And everything was going well.
God, if you want to hear more about the early 90s, subscribe to the Patreon.
We're
about to talk about 93 this coming week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've gone lockdown nostalgic.
Yeah.
So that's been fun.
Yeah.
The rate at which, and this is more so next week, technology improves from here on out. So rapid, especially in the video game world.
Yeah, as a PC gamer throughout this entire decade, I remember like picking up a magazine and being like, how much better is this and how much does it cost? How do I keep up? Like it was frustrating how quickly things advanced.
Mortal Kombat has real people in it. It can't end up that we can do better, surely. The Mortal Kombat movie. I beg your fucking pardon. Yeah.
Let's put a pin in it for this week.
Yep.
Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with the back end of the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Filthycasuals.com.au for a list of all the socials and stuff, links to the Bandcamp and the Patreon where you can get a bonus episode every week.
The Bandcamp specifically, you can go and listen to our history of Sonic. Goes in much more depth.
Yeah.
The inception of the character, the death of the franchise.
We have an MS-DOS games one as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's depth to be found on Bandcamp.
I know. Yeah. I'm frustrated by how much we have to sort of scrape the surface here. I wish we could talk more in depth about some of this stuff.
Mm.
But we'll do that in other avenues like you just mentioned.
Yes. Yeah. So check all that stuff out. Guys, thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
don't have a cow, man. Is that the big early 90s one?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.